the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Are you responsible for your actions? Do you actually experience moral decision-making, and are you responsible for what you do? You know, the whole topic or concept of moral responsibility is being subverted by the intellectual currents of our age. I'm going to be referring today to an article in Scientific American, a report that is basically looking at research that tries to come up with whether or not there is a linkage between a sense of moral responsibility and the experience of believing that all of your actions and thoughts and decisions are determined. Scientific determinism is a big social movement, big intellectual movement. We're going to be talking about what it means, why it's the end game of naturalism, and we're going to be talking about why it just doesn't work, why it's incompatible with a Christian worldview, and frankly, why it would make it impossible to parent a child, to understand a spouse, to understand yourself, or to be involved in any kind of society. You can't have courts if no one is responsible for his or her actions. You cannot have cause and effect. The whole thing begins to fall apart. But if you hold to a naturalistic worldview, you've basically got nowhere to go but some form of determinism. We're going to be talking about that today. It's one of those topics that is going to be more and more a matter of conversation in popular culture because it's beginning to filter down from the sciences, from psychology, now from biology. It is in many ways the ultimate fruition of one strain of evolutionary thought. And if you are, again, a naturalist, you've got nowhere to go but to suggest that the brain is nothing more than a bunch of chemicals that are reacting. And if it's merely chemicals reacting, then in what sense are we responsible for how chemicals react? We'll be talking about it today on the Albert Mohler Program. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I published an article this morning at albertmohler.com entitled, "So Why Did I Write This? The Delusion of Determinism." And we'll be getting to that issue in just a moment, as well as your calls. Not once, not twice, but three times. Tropical Storm Fay has hit the state of Florida. It's an amazing thing. And the end result there in Florida has been pretty massive flooding. Some areas of Florida receiving over 2 feet of rain. Florida has been needing rain for some time, but this is not exactly the kind of rain it needs. But you're looking at a state that has been hit three separate times by one storm. It looks like Tropical Storm Fay will be heading up to the northwest out of the Florida panhandle and moving on into the rest of the nation, where it's likely now to dump a significant amount of rain in the Gulf Coast and beyond. Florida Governor Charlie Crist is saying that the state, at least in terms of some counties and regions, will be a disaster area because of the flooding. And even though it has not come with the kind of torrential tidal surge and the kind of wind associated with the great storms of devastation such as Hurricane Katrina, it is a reminder to us that if you get that much rain and that much water concentrated in one place at one time, it can do a great deal of damage. Looking at other issues in the news, a group of college presidents and academic leaders is calling for a public conversation about lowering the legal age for beverage alcohol. The Washington Post reports that the presidents of some of the nation's most prestigious colleges are arguing that lowering the legal drinking age might get students to drink less. Now, folks, this news began to break just a couple of days ago, and I did not give it much attention because I knew there would be a backlash, and here it is. These college presidents are being confronted by an entire wave of response that includes everything from transportation officials, health experts, government leaders, and opponents of drunken driving. I cannot imagine that these presidents will not one day be embarrassed for what they have done here in suggesting lowering the legal drinking age, because many people are onto what's actually going on here, and that is just downloading the problem. Jonathan Adkins, a spokesman for the Governor's Highway Safety Association, said these are college presidents, university presidents that are just punting on the issue and leaving high school principals to deal with it. It's very disappointing. Here's the problem. America's college students turned out to be major consumers of beverage alcohol. Not only that, but they turn out to be drinking it more than persons their own age who are not in college. Furthermore, they tend to drink it in terms of binge drinking that leads to several kinds of health problems. It leads to drunk driving. It leads to over 1,000. In fact, some people are suggesting 1,700 lives of college students lost to various alcohol-related injuries and deaths that take place just because of the kind of drinking patterns that are now more and less common on America's college and university campuses. We're talking here about the presidents of universities such as Duke University, Johns Hopkins University, the University of Maryland, Dartmouth College. Well over 100 of them have joined in a statement calling upon the nation to consider lowering the legal drinking age. Now, the logic of their presentation is really fascinating. Their argument comes down to this. When college students can't drink until they're 21, they tend to lie and to use false identification and other things, or to go to places where they can get illegal access to alcohol. And because it is illegal, they tend to be immature and drink too much. Furthermore, the fact that the drinking age is generally 21 means that they aspire to do this, and yet they have not developed the kind of maturity to know when enough is enough. Now, I have to tell you right up front that I find this an entirely ludicrous argument, suggesting that if we allow teenagers to start drinking earlier in terms of the legal possession and purchase of beverage alcohol, that they will drink less, is, I would suggest, absolutely counterintuitive. So if they're not mature enough when they get to college to handle this, we're now supposed to believe that they would be more mature if you allow them to drink at even younger ages? State by state, there might be differences in the legal drinking age, but for the fact that the federal government has tied the funding of transportation bills to the fact that the state must have a legal drinking age no younger than 21. This is a major legal issue for many college and university presidents because, after all, when you start looking at the fact that they are where these students are, they are the ones who often have to deal with the effects of this kind of drinking, the abuse of alcohol, drunkenness, drunken driving, and all the rest. But it is absolutely fascinating to see how they want to download this. You know, there's some legal liability issues here, too. And there's some who are suggesting that what these college and university presidents are really concerned about is the fact that they are being held liable, in some cases, for underage drinking that goes on their campuses by students who are not legally old enough to drink. I agree with Mr. Adkin that that makes absolutely no sense to suggest that the answer to this is now downloading the problem to high schools. And I'm sure there's enough drinking already that is a major problem going on in high schools, much less making it possible for this to get downloaded further and further. And that's just another reminder that when you start dealing with an issue like this by trying to mitigate it without dealing with it directly, if you have 19-year-olds who want to drink like 21-year-olds, then you're going to have 17-year-olds who want to drink like 19-year-olds and 15-year-olds that want to drink like 17-year-olds. That's just not a responsible way to deal with the problem. This is where also parents need to come in. And I say that because there are all too many parents who think that this is someone else's problem. But in many cases, you're looking here at parents who simply have either set a bad example on this question or are failing to set the kind of rules and boundaries that would protect their children, whether they are at home or at university. You know, we're living in a strange time where so many different aspects of our convoluted confusion of values becomes clear when we start talking about animals as pets. You have the animal rights activists on one side who don't even want us to use the word pet. They want to talk about companion animals because it's condescending to speak of another species as a pet. Then on the other side, you have people who are buying multi-million dollar and in the case of Leona Helmsley, multi-million dollar estates to their dogs. And you have an entire industry, we reported on this program several months ago in New York, of custom-made fur garments for animals who already have fur. Now, Time Magazine is out with a report that one of the fastest-growing social networking spaces on the internet is doggyspace.com, a social networking site for dogs launched in July. The site has already gathered 700,000 users and is, according to Time Magazine, this is their language, the newest pup in a growing litter of online communities for pets. Okay, a little moment of sanity here might go a long way. I'd like to meet the dog that signs himself up for Doggy Space. Suggesting that this is for pets is just another example of our blindness to our own narcissism. I really don't care if you want to register your pet at Doggy Space and let your dog Have pictures for display so that all may admire your beloved pet. But let's not fool ourselves. This isn't a space for dogs. The dogs are getting no benefit from this. It's for the owners. The dog's not typing up there on his doggy wall what he's doing today in order to share that with his doggy friends. There's a human back there. This is really mydoggyspace.com. Really for the human companion to the companion animal in this case. When we're this confused as a society, it won't show up just with the dogs. Back to talk about moral responsibility in an age of determinism on the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. You know, the whole issue of determinism and moral responsibility may sound like something very abstract and esoteric. You may wonder, you know, what does this have to say about my everyday life? Well, let's just think about some things we will all remember, such as, if you're of a certain age, Flip Wilson, the comedian, saying, "The devil made me do it." In other words, I'm not responsible for my actions. I'm not responsible for giving in to temptation. I'm not responsible for having made this decision rather than another decision. I have no moral responsibility here. And we laughed at it. It was funny. It was a part of his laugh line because he'd done something naughty, but he said, "Look, the devil made me do it," as if that's just going to make the moral responsibility go away. Now, that was comedy. It wasn't at all funny, however, when back in the 1980s, a man committed a murder in San Francisco, indeed of the mayor of San Francisco, and presented a successful defense arguing that he was under the influence of too much sugar and other ingredients from eating Twinkies. Since then, creative attorneys have come up with all kinds of arguments in order to represent their defendants in court, suggesting that even though the act happened, the defendant is not morally responsible for the act. There have been people who have suggested that crimes have been committed because people saw too much television, because they ate too much of this, because they had too little of that. And it's all a matter of determinism. It's a matter of shifting responsibility. Back in the late 18th century, this was basically a philosophical issue, but now it's far more than that. In the mid-20th century, the psychologist B.F. Skinner came up with his theory of behaviorism, arguing that we basically do what we do because we have been conditioned by what we have experienced in the past, so that our behaviors are actually more or less programmed by the environment. In other words, we're not really responsible for it. And the whole issue of behaviorism suggested that there are people who aren't responsible for their actions, their likes, their dislikes, their moral choices, or anything else, because given their environment and their experiences, there is no other conclusion or decision to which they could have come. These days, the determinism is a bit more hard line. I want you to think with me for a moment about naturalism. This is the worldview held by those who are committed to evolutionary theory. Naturalism is the worldview that says that everything that is must be explained in purely natural terms, which means you can have no room in your explanation for a creator, and you can have no room in your explanation for something that cannot be understood, measured, observed in a natural way. So they're having a big problem with self-consciousness, with consciousness itself, with moral responsibility. And this is what they come down to. The brain must be some kind of engine that operates on chemical processes. What goes on in the brain is the intersection and an interreaction of physical matter and some kind of chemical reaction. And so there are those who are suggesting that, and they're saying this with a straight face, the brain is not merely the intellectual organ. It's the organ where all these things take place so that our likes and our dislikes, our choices, the choice to do this rather than to do that, the choice to tell the truth or the choice to lie, the choice to go here or the choice to go there, is really nothing more than a matter of the way the chemicals are coming together in the brain. Now, if that's so, here's what we know. We know that we're not responsible. And it's just true. The human beings want to escape and evade that responsibility. We do not want to have to look in the mirror and know that we are responsible for our own choices. If someone could come along with a therapeutic answer or a scientific or pseudoscientific theory to tell us that we are not responsible for what we do, An awful lot of people are going to buy into that and say, that's absolutely right. I simply am who I am because I couldn't be anyone else. I did what I did because I couldn't do anything else. Scientific American out right now is reporting on a study in which two psychologists have attempted to link determinism and moral responsibility. Now, this is what they did. They conducted a study in which they told certain people that they were absolutely determined, that their choices were determined, that their likes and dislikes were determined, that they had no free will in order to make a decision, and thus they were not responsible. And then they tested how often they cheated on an exam, and they cheated a lot more than those who had not been given the text saying that everything was determined. Now, I'm not sure exactly what to do with this research. I find more interesting than the research itself the coverage in Scientific American. After all, Scientific American presents itself as something of the public face of research science here in this culture. And from the time I was a teenage kid, I was reading Scientific American. But when you look at an article like this, and by the way, I appreciate the fact that this particular article was forwarded to me by a listener to this program, you see that this is now entering the kind of public conversation that we need to have on this program. The link between moral choice and moral responsibility is virtually instinctive to humans. We know that we are responsible for our decisions. As a matter of fact, it's basic to our understanding of what it means to be human. We hold each other responsible for our actions and decisions. But if all of our choices are illusory and everything is merely the inevitable consequence of something beyond our control, moral responsibility is an exercise in delusion. So let me just remind you right now that there are people who suggest that determinism is true, that our experience of thinking that we are making a choice is actually a delusion, that we are fated by either environmental factors or the physiology of the brain or any number of other factors to do what we do and to be who we are. Now, the scientists who are pushing that realize they have a problem. If that is so, then what do you do with the court system? I mean, how do you have a trial of someone when the purpose of that trial is to determine moral and legal responsibility if indeed we are all automatons doing only what we have been programmed by some force, animate or inanimate, to do? Just imagine what it would mean to raise a child. How in the world would you raise a child if you start from the premise that that child is simply doing what the child has to do? There's no choice. The child is not operating out of the experience of making a choice, but only the illusion of making a choice. The child's choices are already determined by the chemical processes in his or her brain. You can't discipline a child if the child's not responsible. You can't also teach a child if it turns out that the teaching doesn't have any impact on what the child actually does. Now, I want to tell you right now, I am not too worried that the vast majority of Americans are going to buy into this theory of determinism. And I'm not worried about that because it does run so counter to everything we know about ourselves and everything we know about our children and, frankly, we know about our spouses and we know about our families and we know about our friends and we know about ourselves. It runs counter to everything but we by intuition know about what it means to be human. Now, as a Christian theologian, I want to follow that up and say that a part of what it means to be made in the image of God is to be made a moral creature. Human beings are the only beings made in the image of God, and we are the only creatures with this kind of moral conscience. But what good is a moral conscience if we're not making moral decisions? The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. The question is this: are you morally responsible? Is it vitally important that we hold on to the affirmation of moral responsibility in order to be able to live in a world that would make any kind of sense, would maintain any kind of moral order, would have any kind of justice, would demand any kind of accountability? The phone number again is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Flip Wilson said, "The devil made me do it." Defendants have suggested that the Twinkie made me do it. Too much television made me do it. Too much exposure to this or too little exposure to that made me do it. But, you know, at the end of the day, he did it. She did it. And we know, we really do know, that we can't evade moral responsibility. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Back with your calls on the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The whole issue of moral responsibility is something that so many want to evade. And let's face it, there are times when we would all have liked to evade it. You know, when you're a kid and you're caught doing the wrong thing, it sure would have been convenient to say, I didn't do it. It was environmental factors. It's not my responsibility. I was simply being programmed by other factors, whether it's behaviorism or whatever, to do what I did. Or I didn't choose to do the wrong thing. It was simply the pattern of chemical reactions in my brain. And more this is getting into the legal system. More and more this is getting into the educational system. More and more this is filtering down into the culture where moral responsibility is being routinely denied. I want to know what you think about this. My argument is really simple. I think most of us really know that this isn't so. I think it's not only a matter of our intuition that we know we are morally responsible. I think it's just a matter of the fact that if you take this to its logical conclusion, you can't operate with real human beings in real life because we have to hold each other morally responsible. And one of the interesting things about this Scientific American study says that those who believe in moral determinism still act as if they ought to be moral, and it suggests at the end of the article, something that's really, really interesting, it suggests that maybe they do this because even though they believe in determinism, it says here they just fall back into the belief that they do have free will after all. Well, no wonder they can't operate otherwise. One test of a worldview is whether it can be consistently applied, and this one cannot. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Mount Washington, Kentucky. Jennifer's listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Yes, I agree with you completely, and I think one way that we see this show up in our kids is with the problem of ADHD and the fact that, you know, you couple that with the fact that they're telling us now that you can't discipline your kids, you know, there's no corporal punishment in the schools. There's nothing basically that you can do to your children, and so they just drug them, you know, and then because they supposedly have this ADHD and they can't help what they do, and so you really can't do anything with them.
You know, it's a very interesting statement, Jennifer, and you start looking at the escalating, almost skyrocketing rates of diagnoses of ADHD and various other real or imagined syndromes, and you know that a part of this is the attempt to avoid responsibility, and I'm not denying that something real is often a factor in these cases. I'm not denying that there are, frankly, issues that impinge upon the lives of many people, whether it be children who are supposedly hyperactive or whether it be adults who may have diminished capacity. I am saying that we should be very alarmed as a society with the desperate lengths to which many are now just determined to go to try to eliminate virtually all moral responsibility. And, you know, it's interesting, Jennifer, when you start talking about that, in so many of these cases of the learning disabilities, this is an easy out. And again, I'm not saying that they're never real. I'm just saying that they can be an easy out. And it's hard to believe they can be as real as the statistics are telling us. As a matter of fact, there are a lot of studies out indicating that in some school systems, in some areas, given some populations, especially of school-age boys, the majority of them are diagnosed as either having one of these issues like ADHD or being at risk of them. In that case, you don't have to have a PhD in statistics to know that if the majority, are marked by this, it's what you call normal. And that's just something that we really don't want to face. Thanks for your call, Jennifer. Let's go to Leanne, also listening to WFIA. Leanne, what do you think?
Hi, Dr. Mohler. I love your show. I believe it was in Matthew 13 that Christ was speaking in parables to his disciples, and he was speaking on good seed and bad seed, and the disciples said, do you want us to separate them? And Christ said, no, in the last days when I return, I will separate the good seed from the bad seed, because if you try, you might hurt the good seed. In essence, Christ himself said that we have a choice to be either a good seed as a human being or a bad seed. Satan knows this as well, and if it were to come to the final days, Satan's going to do whatever he can to possibly, germinate as many bad seeds as he can. And it's just this determinism. It just seems like it's another
Yeah.
reality spiritual warfare step.
Leanne, I really appreciate your call. And what I most appreciate about your call is that it takes us right into the heart of the gospel. Because let's face it, the Christian gospel makes no sense if determinism is true. The Christian gospel makes no sense if we are not morally responsible. The Bible storyline is about creation, fall, redemption, and consummation. If the fall was not a matter, if it was not a matter for which Adam and Eve were responsible and we responsible in them and with them, then the entire notion of sin itself makes absolutely no sense. The phone number for your calls is 877-893-8255. Right back with your calls on the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
This is, no pun intended, heady stuff, but when you're talking about the brain, you're talking about something that is a mystery to all of us. But if you're a naturalist, if you're an evolutionist, and you have to explain everything in purely materialistic or naturalistic terms, then the brain just becomes an engine or an organ, something like a computer. And just like a computer, it has a good explanation for how these things happen. If you understand the programming and understand the hardware and you understand how these things go in, you'll understand what's going to come out. Well, when it comes to the human brain, well, here's our problem. We have the experience of consciousness. We can think, and we can think about ourselves thinking. And we make choices, and we can experience ourselves making these choices. But if you're a pure evolutionist, if you're tied into this entire worldview of naturalism, then you, like Mark Hauser and Steven Pinker and Daniel Dennett and other theorists, have to suggest that it's just a matter of chemicals in the brain, chemical reactions in the brain. And you know what? If it's just chemical reactions in the brain, then we're not responsible. And they really mean this. This isn't a joke. This is not some kind of abstract theory. This is how they believe we must now begin to think about consciousness, moral responsibility in the brain. But just think about what you do with that. You tell the kid, don't run in the outside and in the traffic. He runs in the traffic. What do? You say, well, you know, he really didn't disobey me. It's just a matter of determinism. It's just a matter of the way the chemicals are in his brain. Or you are caught by a policeman doing something that is illegal, and you say, I didn't make the choice to do it. I'm not morally responsible for doing it. It's just a matter of the fact that that's how the chemicals in my brain work. The Scientific American report indicates that even people who say they believe indeterminism go back to their old way of thinking in everyday life. And I'm going to argue it's because they have to, and I'm going to suggest that that in itself is a proof of the Creator. There's just no way to deny for long the kind of moral responsibility we all know is there. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Fritz on the line. Fritz, what do you think?
Well, this topic reminds me of the verse at the very end of Romans chapter 1, where Paul says that the wrath of God is coming upon not only those people who do these things, but upon those who approve of those who do these things. And I think that determinism is just another way of saying, well, it's okay that they did evil because they couldn't do any different anyway. And so they're approving of the evil that people are doing on that basis.
Yeah. No, I think that's a very good point. And it just points out that most of these subversions of moral responsibility are kind of a conspiracy. And the entire society sometimes becomes a group of co-conspirators about this. We want to deny that people are responsible for what they do. Now, if we can deny that our neighbor is responsible for what she does, then we can claim that we're not responsible for what we do. We're all looking for an excuse. Going all the way back to the Garden of Eden, what did Adam and Eve do? They stitched together fig leaves. They're trying to cover what they did. They're trying to evade moral responsibility. They hide from the Lord God, the Creator, in the garden. But notice God holds them accountable. And that is central to the biblical story, to the entire logic of the Bible. The Lord God, the Creator, holds his creatures accountable. God did not say to Adam and Eve, what you're doing is simply what was determined by your experiences, by your environment, and perhaps even by the chemical processes in your brain. He said, because you have done this, you will surely die. And Fritz, you're exactly right. That's echoed again when you get to Romans chapter 1. And in Romans chapter 1, as Fritz indicates, it's not only those who do these things, but those who approve of them. And I get his logic right away. You know, buying into this kind of worldview of determinism is a way of lowering the moral responsibility, if not denying the moral responsibility of others for what they do. They can't help it. That's just who they are. It's just the processes in their brain. It's just their environment. You know, it goes right back to the old courtroom setting where the reality is if you can come up with an argument that wins, you can get your client off. But, you know, still, we have the nagging knowledge that we are morally responsible. Thanks for your call, Fritz. Let's go to Fred. Fred, what do you think? Calling from Texas.
Yeah, I think that if there's any credibility to this, then we might as well be prepared to open up all the prison doors and let everybody out of jail.
You know, I don't think, Fred, that you think that's a very good idea. That's because you're a sane man. And, you know, I'm glad to say I don't think people are going to buy this argument, not on a whole-scale, wide-scale basis, because they, like you, are sane. And they know that we are morally responsible. They also know that we have to hold people morally responsible. And you know, that just goes back again to the, I won't say irrationality, I'll just simply say the dysfunctionality of this entire idea of determinism, because those who hold to it really can't hold to it consistently. I mean, what do they do? What happens when someone steals their car? What happens when their kid disobeys? What happens when, you know, they see something that requires a verdict of moral responsibility? They hold to a worldview that says that's illusory. But we live in a world in which it's made all too real over and over again. You know, this is where I believe that one problem in this world, I know this is a little footnote, and there's some people out there be scratching your head saying, where did he come up with this? I'm going to tell you right now, this is where having children transforms your life. You know, there are a lot of ways you can divide human beings, but one of the ways I would suggest that by experience, human beings are divided between those who've been a parent and those who have not. Because if you are a parent, let me tell you what, you've learned a whole lot about human depravity. It's because you've looked into that crib. You've looked into that crib and seen that cute little baby. And you've seen that cute little baby look at you back from the crib and disobey you. And you wonder, why could that child do that? That child is so cute. That child is so, you know, what's the word we use? Innocent. Well, the Bible says that child is not innocent. And your experience will say that child is not innocent. And then you have the experience of that child. Let's say that child is now a toddler who does something wrong. And you call that child's name. You can't find him. He's hiding behind the sofa. Why? Because like Adam and Eve hiding in the garden, there is a deep moral conscience that cries out within that child, you've done wrong. He is ashamed. Perhaps he's fearful of judgment. He hides. Well, if determinism is true, there's no reason to hide. No reason to fear. No reason to take any responsibility. The problem with that is you can't live in a society that's ordered that way. We can't all be toddlers living with a toddler's level of moral responsibility and maturity. But, you know, there are people, I think, reflected in this kind of worldview who aren't even up to the toddler stage of that understanding. They don't even know what the baby knows and what any parent of a baby knows. Back with final thoughts in just a moment. This is the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back. You know, in essence, we are still mysteries to ourselves. I mean, just considering what we see when we look in the mirror, we don't understand everything about why we do what we do, why we like what we like, why our preference is this rather than that. Sometimes we even watch ourselves just in terms of observing ourselves, and we become a mystery to ourselves. I'm not sure exactly why I did that. That's exactly what Paul's talking about in Romans chapter 7, where he says, I set my mind to do one thing, but then I watch myself do the opposite. You know, we're not denying here that there is a sense in which we are mysteries unto ourselves. What we're denying is that reduces in any way our moral responsibility. We are morally responsible. That is key, central to what it means to be human as revealed in the scripture. There is no way we can understand ourselves as human beings until we understand that we are creatures made in the image of God, and that a part of that imago Dei, that being made in the image of God, is being morally responsible. We do not hold animals morally responsible, because we do not believe that animals are making a kind of moral choice. We do believe that human beings, distinct from those animals, are indeed moral creatures with moral accountability. The effort to subvert moral accountability is not just something that's abstract and philosophical. It's not limited to the college and university or to the think tank. It is filtering its way down into the legal system. It is working its way down into the educational system. And it is working its way through popular culture. One of the things we need to be watching is how an effort to subvert moral responsibility begins to gain traction in this society. Because here is the inevitable result. If no one is responsible, then nothing is ultimately right and nothing is ultimately wrong. The loss of moral responsibility means moral anarchy, and that means not only do we lose the concept of what it would mean to be a parent and to try to teach a child, or to be a judge and to try to reach a verdict, or frankly, just to live next door to a neighbor and know whether you can trust that neighbor. It comes down to the fact that it reduces what it means to be human to being just one more animal, one more among the species in the animal kingdom. And one of the sad things we need to note is that there are those who are alive today who operate from worldviews that would have us to reduce humanity to the level of just any other animal. And that, dear friends, is something we have to see, detect, discern, and confront. We'll be back tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. God's blessings to those of you who are dealing with such things as Tropical Storm Fay. News out of Florida is that alligators, snakes, and other wildlife are moving into the streets flooded by the hurricane. If you're touched by that tropical storm, then watch where you go. As a native Floridian, I have to remember, hey, they were there first. I'll meet you tomorrow for the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.